Joining us now is Scott Shera, and he's got an update as to what is happening in the case where they're trying to get some justice for his daughter, Grace Shera, a 19-year-old with Down syndrome, who was literally murdered, as we talked about it the last time, by a hospital. It truly is amazing that this was allowed, but we have to focus on what is being done. The denigration of human life, the do not resuscitate orders, and the hospital death protocols that were pushed through during the COVID. And so he's got an update on this. Again, his website to keep up with what is happening is ouramazinggrace.net. Thank you for joining us, Scott.
Well, thanks for having me again, David. It's really a pleasure.
No, as always, it's sad to hear this story. It is heartbreaking. But we have to talk about this. We can't just move on and forget this ever happened. And Grace's story is important, and I'm glad that you are not going to allow this medical murder that we've seen happen so many times. Many people have been intimidated by this, but you've been like a bulldog to chase this down. So thank you for doing that for all of us, not just to get justice for Grace, but it has to be done to establish a precedent and to pull some of this stuff back and to show people what is really happening.
Well, that's spot on. What's interesting is, you know, COVID woke me up. So this case really has nothing to do with COVID other than it happened during COVID. Mm-hmm. You know, Grace was given a combination of meds to euthanize her. So she never received the typical things that were under the emergency use authorization, which, you know, the press is talking about remdesivir and ventilators. So Grace never was on a ventilator. She never got remdesivir, but she was given end of life meds to euthanize her. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you and I were just talking briefly before I came on. 2 days ago, the local CBS affiliate in our area put a story that's gone crazy on social media about a dog being euthanized. And yet our case, they wouldn't even come to our hearing last week on Monday the 30th. We had the biggest victory we've had so far, David.
And oh, that's good.
The local affiliates, Fox, ABC, CBS, none of them came. You know, mm-hmm. And we invited them to come to the hearing. It's so big, and yet that's not reported. But, you know, a dog catcher case is reported. It's ridiculous, but
it is.
You know, we're trying to save lives here.
Yeah, it is. And we've seen this human life denigrated while we talk about what happens to animals for the longest time. You know, you look at what Fauci was doing during all this, and what did they do? They focused on some experiments that he had with puppies. Yeah, it was heinous, and it was heartbreaking, but he's doing this to kids. I mean, he's running an organ harvesting thing, you know, and creating transhuman mice with organs that they harvest out of babies that were aborted. And everybody focuses, they misdirect you, and they misdirect your compassion to these things, you know, the puppies that he ruthlessly harmed. And they don't talk about humans. And that's the most vulnerable among us, whether you're talking about babies or you're talking about, you know, Grace that's there. The one aspect, though, about this that I thought was, you know, in terms of COVID, was the fact that they wouldn't let you there. You know, they kept you at bay, and you saw this unfolding on Zoom as they're murdering your daughter. Is that correct?
Well, it's actually a little more nefarious than that, because when we took Grace to the emergency room, I told them I will not allow Grace in the hospital unless I'm there. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, you can't be because of COVID policy. And I said, well, then I'm going to take Grace home. And I wish they would have said, we'll take her home then, because Grace would be alive today.
Yeah.
But what they did, they had a meeting with the higher ups at the hospital and said, well, we decided you can stay. So I was with Grace from October 6th until the 10th of 2000. This is 2021. You know, this is the worst quarter of the hospital deaths. You know, so people understand the hospital deaths with COVID. The United States had 1.2 million hospital deaths during the 39-month official COVID period. We were number one in the world by far. India was number two with only 531,000 deaths, yet their population is four times that of the United States. Mm-hmm. So that frames what's going on here. So you can see, okay, well, just hearing that number, you'd see, well, this is something happened. Well, You know, so I was in the room until the 10th. They took me out by an armed guard on the 10th, David. Wow. And then we had to negotiate. We hired an attorney to negotiate with the hospital attorney to let my daughter in as a replacement. So during the time, Grace didn't have an advocate, which, you know, I can't, you know, it's hard to go back there. But when she didn't have an advocate for 47 hours, they sedated her instead of taking care of her. Mm. They just treated her like, I mean, like an animal. Yes. And it's hard to stomach. So that's what happened. You know, we're you know, as I drill down what happened with the hearing on Monday, the reason it's important is because of the fact that we pierced the medical malpractice veil. And this is the first time it's happened in at least four decades. You know, there used to be cases where they would try to separate out battery from medical malpractice, but the state legislatures and the precedent-setting court cases have done really a good job of putting a wall around these doctors. So what happened on Monday the 30th, we filed our case on April 11th. There was also another motion to dismiss in July, but now there was two motions to dismiss that were heard on Monday the 30th. And the purpose of those motions was to take our battery claim. We have five claims. We have wrongful death, medical malpractice, battery, lack of informed consent, and then a declaratory judgment for the illegal do not resuscitate order and the euthanizing meds. So those are our five claims. Well, the battery claim is what they're concerned about because they don't want to get outside of the state statutory protection, which, interestingly, David, the state statutes require the doctors to have medical malpractice insurance to cover the statutory exemption they already have. So, you know, at that point, all their legal fees are being paid. And, you know, the statutory limit in a medical malpractice case is $750,000. So that was their goal. They made an all-court press to have the judge dismiss our battery claim, and we went on the offensive, and the judge saw that we were right, and he's letting the claim go. We have the first trial in the country. We have a 3-week jury trial coming up November 4th of 2024. That's wow. The jury selection day. That's the day before the presidential election. And I, you know, after you might want to question it, but I want to read a couple things out of our brief. Mm-hmm. I posted our brief on Grace's website for others to copy, because this is now we've set a standard that people can pierce the medical malpractice veil. And it's critical to winning these cases that doctors are held to account for their intentional actions. Malpractice means it was an accident. This was no accident. Mm-hmm. This was intentional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very important. And so that website would be ouramazinggrace.net, where people can see that complaint. And if something like this has happened to them and their family members, they can use that, because that's been successful, and at least this court, in terms of penetrating those exclusions that they have built in there to protect themselves. That's very important, a very important precedent, and that's why I wanted to get you on to let people know, you know, what is happening in your case, so that we can move this on. A lot of people have had this happen to them, as you pointed out, the number of people that died in hospitals, and of course, it's almost all people who are dying with the excess deaths were in hospitals, and just a tremendous mass murder that was done during those years in a variety of different ways, medical kidnapping and the do not resuscitate and all the rest of the stuff. It wasn't just these novel new approaches that they had, but just isolating people and doing these types of things to them. You've had an advance there. Was there anything else that you wanted to tell us about? So you kind of got this coming up in a year. You got your trial, and you said there's five different areas. Are all five of those areas still alive, or is it? This was the key thing, though, that they.
This was the key one, right? Yeah. All five areas are alive, and the reason we zeroed in on battery is because we're trying to shed light on this evil. This battery type thing has been going on for a long time. And you can imagine, you know, you get into a hospital setting and the programming that we have taken and we've accepted as a population is that, you know, we trust the doctor, you trust the white coat, you know, they're obviously smarter than the average bears. You get into the hospital setting and, you know, they just start doing things and they never tell you what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of accept that, you blindly accept it because you trust them. And that has really set up murders, not just with the COVID era, but they've been hastening death for a long time. Yes. And I want to read directly out of our legal team's brief so people understand what I'm talking about and see how we frame this, because it really applies to all 1.2 million of the deaths that happened during COVID, but it happened way before. This has been happening for a long time.
Yes. And so it's this part here that is going to explain exactly why you're mentioning battery, because people typically think of battery as somebody being, you know, physically attacked, beaten, stabbed, or something like that, right?
Exactly. So that's how people think about it. And I want to share how it is in a medical setting. So what's going on is we've been programmed to accept medical murder as an acceptable thing in our society. And it's not acceptable. When a physician or a nurse hastens death, that means they speed up the death. That's what they did with Grace. That's what they do a lot of times in hospice care, where you think, well, hospice care is just end of life care. Well, it is, but it's different than what people think. I've had Ron Panzer on my own podcast, and Ron's the foremost expert in this. He's been studying for 50 years and shows the patterns of how they have implemented this euthanasia agenda to hasten death. So anyway, the first quote, I'm going to give you two quotes out of our brief. And the first one helps people define what a battery is. So, quote, imagine a physician who fails to fully inform a patient about the risks of a leg amputation, but the patient does agree to have his leg amputated. This violates the duty to obtain informed consent under state statute. So that's really important to understand. Mm-hmm. The failure to obtain informed consent is also a battery. But what's happened through state legislatures and legal precedent is the cabal has put informed consent underneath medical malpractice. So now imagine a physician who amputates a patient's leg without obtaining consent or even telling the patient or the patient's family what he is doing. And in this case, removing the patient's power of attorney and parent from the hospital first. That's me. That is a battery. Mm-hmm. So we're differentiating. So lack of informed consent means they didn't tell the whole truth. A battery is they didn't tell you anything. Mm-hmm. So you see the difference. Yes. All right. So then what they did.
Let me interject here, because this is, you know, a lot of people had similar situations to yours, and even before COVID, as you point out. But especially during COVID, and you look at the vaccines and stuff like that, this would be an approach I think people could extrapolate to those who were coerced into having the shot without their consent. I have a listener earlier in the program said that her husband was vaccinated in the hospital without his consent, and the vaccine killed him. So, you know, when you look at a situation like that, there's a lot of extrapolation to, I mean, informed consent just became a dirty, thrown away word phrase, you know, during this whole thing. And so to recover that and say, no, without informed consent, this is really battery. And when you go to these extraordinary links that they did, it really is murder that is happening there. And that's the key thing about your case. And I think people could use this in a lot of different ways, because, you know, this was done in a lot of different ways to people. In 2020.
Well, you're right on again, and this does apply to the so-called vaccine. Mm-hmm. I had Dr. Moon also on my podcast, and she was the one who went in front of Ron Johnson's hearing and pulled out the package insert. So a package insert, so everybody understands, a package insert is the informed consent. So a package insert is supposed to lay out all the pros, cons, risks, etc. And so in Grace's case, for example, I studied these because she was given Presidex, lorazepam, and morphine. So I studied these package inserts. Well, Dr. Moon presented in front of Ron Johnson's committee, the package insert for the so-called vaccine was completely blank, nothing. Mm-hmm. So you pull out the package insert, it's blank.
I remember somebody going to a pharmacist, and she said, to illustrate the point, she's recording it kind of surreptitiously, right? And says, I'm here to get my COVID vaccine, but can I see the insert first? And the pharmacist says, sure, I'll be right back. I'll get it. And he comes back a little while later and goes, there isn't anything there. I shouldn't be giving this to anybody. It was a bluff.
That's fantastic. I mean, hopefully he took that seriously and stopped, because then she saved lives.
Yeah.
So I want to frame how egregious these deaths are. And we have 121 postings on Grace's website of deaths, many more egregious than Grace's. You know, God opened up this door, David, mm-hmm. and I'm humbled to walk through it because we've got the first test case in the whole country to shed light on this evil. So what they did to go on the offensive, here's, I'm going to quote out of the brief again. Quote, defendants want this court to rule that a patient with Down syndrome can be intentionally restrained, intentionally deprived of advocacy, and intentionally administered deadly sedatives, all without consent, and these actions are simple medical negligence. Assuming battery under medical malpractice in such a way would make hospitals walled gardens where any intentional misconduct would be treated as simple negligence. Indeed, defendants envision a world where there is no common law claim for the failure of a healthcare provider to obtain consent that falls outside of medical malpractice. In this world, an unethical or financially motivated physician may administer deadly drugs without consent for malign purposes, including making room for new patients. The physician's liability would be limited under the medical malpractice statute, and even that liability is subject to insurance coverage.
Wow.
So we went on the offensive, as you can tell, but
That's excellent. That's so well stated. And it's so important because, you know, we talk earlier in the program, I'm talking about abortion and some things like that, but you know, pro-life means a lot of different things. It means euthanasia, besides the murder of abortion, the murdering of people throughout their life. And so what you're doing here is exposing a practice that is as heinous as any of these other murder practices that they come up with medical euphemisms for. A very important and important statement of this for people to be able to get justice. That is a very persuasive statement that you just had there.
Well, I thought they knocked it out of the park. And so people understand, you know, too bad for Scott's daughter. I mean, I get that. It didn't happen to you. I mean, I'm awake because it happened to me. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to frame this so that people can wake up without it having to happen to them.
Yes.
That's why I share about the 1.2 million deaths. But it's way bigger than that, David. Consider the fact that what they're trying to do, Ezekiel Emanuel laid this out in 1996 when he said non-contributing members of society don't deserve medical care. Well, guess who the non-contributing members of society are? The first ones. Mm-hmm. It's the disabled and the elderly. Mm-hmm. So how do they determine it? So it's easy. Medicare and Medicaid. There's 135 million people on Medicare and Medicaid. Those people, the financial piece of that puzzle in the United States is 50% of our annual federal budget, $3 trillion a year. So that's how they're doing it. Mm-hmm. These people are too expensive. We've got to balance the budget. Well, these guys don't care about balancing a budget. They bankrupted our country a long time ago. We have a fiat currency. So, I mean, it's all a lie. It's lie, lie, lie. And anyway, Grace's case, I am so humbled that you're willing to keep sharing it and media that is. I hope we can get to the mainstream so that people can wake up and you know, be prepared and fight back.
Yes. Well, we'll try to tell everybody, try to share these interviews. It's very important. A lot of people have been affected by this. And as you point out, you know, we're looking at such a gigantic chunk of the federal deficit that they can't afford it. I said from the very beginning, I said, I think this is why they're focusing on the elderly with all this COVID stuff, because, people who are dying were at or above life expectancy. They had multiple comorbidities. And so they're getting them out of the way because they've got this big liability that's coming along, a big financial liability. They kill people for a lot less than the amount of money that is involved here. And so this is something that could be coming to everybody's doorstep. And you need to be aware of what the establishment, the medical establishment, the government establishment is not only capable of doing, but has done to a lot of people, Grace included. And so it's very important for people to see this. They can see this at ouramazinggrace.net. It is a very important component of the pro-life movement. As we've always said, if they're going to kill people at the end of life and kill people at the beginning of life, they'll kill you whenever you get sick or if anything else happens to you. So everybody is exposed to this risk. But it begins with the most vulnerable in our society, the young, the elderly, and those who are disabled. And then it comes for the rest of us as we see euthanasia exploding and its use in Canada and the rest of this. So tell us again, you've got a podcast that people can keep up with? Tell us where that is found.
It's on all the major platforms. It's called Deprogramming with Grace's Dad. So, I mean, you can go on Rumble, Brighteon, and just type that in. Otherwise, you can go to Grace's main website, which you mentioned, ouramazinggrace.net, and we have a tab that links to it, the Deprogramming tab. So I called it Deprogramming, of course, because I realized after Grace's death how programmed I was. And, you know, the process of becoming deprogrammed is, it's critical. We've been lied to. Yes. And, you know, it's, I called it at the beginning when I first realized, you know, what happened to Grace. You know, it took me several months to connect the dots. And then all of a sudden I'm a full-time researcher and advocate. Well, I called it the Santa Claus effect at the beginning, because, you know, once you are told that Santa Claus doesn't exist, right, you know, the next thing it will, what about the Easter Bunny? What about the Tooth Fairy? And that's the path I've been on, David, in deprogramming myself. I'm way beyond the Tooth Fairy now, but I mean, it's a big job.
Yeah, they've done a great job of gaslighting us on all these different things. I would never tell my kids that there was a Santa Claus. And as a matter of fact, I pushed back against that. You know, they'd see all the Christmas stuff. And I told my son, who's working the board here now, when he was very little, I said, well, you know, there's no Santa Claus. He goes, I know that, Dad. If there was somebody like that, really, they'd be in the Bible, you know. So it's, wow. It's good to understand that, you know, because I didn't want them to come, you know, what is, so what else did they lie to me about? They lied to me about Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny. I wasn't going to lie to them about that. You want to start telling everybody the truth, and that's the key thing. You know, the truth will set you free, right, and the truth is going to set us free from this kind of medical tyranny and martial law and exploitation and culture of death that these people have put up. It's absolutely shameful that this is going on, and I'm so sorry that it happened to you. But again, you know, God uses things that we go through for our own good and for the good of other people, and you certainly have taken this situation and turned it around to help other people, as well as to try to stop this process, this heinous process. Ouramazinggrace.net. Is there anything else that we haven't covered that you want to cover?
Well, I would say two things. One is, if you go to ouramazinggrace.net, I spent the last couple of months putting together a medical murder series, and it's called Medical Murder is the Number One Cause of Death in the United States by Design. And that's where, when I start saying this is outside of COVID and how big it is, I've documented it all there, David. I went through who, what, where, why, when, and how. That's the first six sessions. And then I wrapped it up in number seven is now what? What are you going to do now that this is exposed? So I really would encourage people to spend the time, understand what's going on, so then you can see, okay, this is real stuff. That's the starting point of protecting yourself. And we've been resting on this verse, and I think it's real important because it gives people the perspective of why we're in this fight, which is Genesis 50:20. What you meant for evil, God meant for good, which is what is happening now, the saving of many lives. So I'm outspoken, you know, to help people wake up so they can save their lives physically, because if you don't change your belief, you can't be prepared, right?
That's right.
And then spiritually is substantially more important than physically, because what I have learned, you know, out of all the things I realized I was programmed in, is I had an understanding of Satan, but I really didn't understand how much control he has.
Yes.
You know, obviously God is over Satan, but this is a battle for souls.
Yes.
And so this population reduction agenda is real stuff, and it is a battle for souls. And in part three of the series, the why, I drill that down quite a bit. So thanks for that opportunity to promote the series.
Yes. And give us a little bit of you said this has gone on for a long time before COVID. I mean, give us a little bit more of a tease of this, because I think this sounds like a very significant series, and we'll probably get you back on sometime just to talk about that. But give us a little bit more of a background and broaden that out a little bit for people, more of a teaser, so people will take a look at that.
Well, I brought up a document on my screen. I'm going to set up the document. So I'm going to disclose my age here, because I went to kindergarten in 1968. Mm-hmm. And so that tells you I'm 60 years old now. So when I was 5 years old, God gives us certain memories, David, and you know, nobody else would remember it, but you do. And the thing I remember is a weekly reader in 1968 telling us that it's irresponsible to have more than two children. Mm-hmm. And if our parents had an electric can opener, that was wrong because we have limited resources. So that stuck with me. So then as I was putting together the series, I started digging into the archives of weekly readers to see what's going on. And I couldn't find the exact one from kindergarten, but I saw the one from first grade, and it was in the same, you know, the same year, 1968, and it laid this out. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, they're promoting that the school is the training grounds for the kids. The parents should learn how to train their kids from the school. I mean, this is now wow. In that
and
particular version.
1968 was that was when Paul Ehrlich came out with this population bomb thing. I'm older than you. And and so when I remember the weekly readers and things like that, I remember that really well. But, you know, there wasn't anything like that I recalled being shoved down our throats. But by the time, 8 years later or whatever, they're putting that into a kindergarten curriculum. This depopulation, the population bomb stuff that Paul Ehrlich was doing out there, which became the fundamental thing about the environmental movement and the climate movement and all the rest of this stuff. But it really is a satanic agenda to try to kill the human race. And so exactly. It is. I'm amazed that they put that in the Weekly Reader. Go ahead. I just had to interject that because I was surprised by that. Yeah,
it actually didn't surprise me as I started to understand programming and mm-hmm. how programming works and how they do it. And then I found this document that I have up on my screen. I'm turning because I have it up on my other screen. And this is the first document I could find that was formally discussing. It's called 1967 Plan to Depopulate the United States. And in this document, I've got a number of things highlighted, but I'll just hit two of them. They say that one of the ways that we can depopulate the United States is to encourage increased homosexuality and then put fertility control agents in the water supply. So this is real stuff. Mm-hmm, then if mm-hmm. you jump forward to today, so this is already, you know, way back, but now look at what's happening today. I received a document in August that is titled My Chart Proxy Access for Adult to Teen Accounts. All right, so wrap your head around this. So you think about they start planting these seeds. Well, some parents are objecting. And so the parents that are objecting, the hospitals now, you know, in the old school, David, we knew there was a difference between liberals and conservatives, but everybody knew there was a rule box. It's called the rule of law. Mm-hmm. Now, everybody who doesn't have a conscience is operating outside the rule of law. So this hospital system in this case, they sent out a memo to every parent that is involved with their system and said, once your child turns 12, you as a parent no longer have access to their records. You can only get access through the teenager giving you proxy access. Mm. And if they do that, the proxy access limits you. You can't see any social history information such as sexual activity, substance abuse. You can't see what appointments they had, and you can't review any lab or sensitive radiology reports. So this turns over, you just think about it. You as a parent, you're responsible for your children. You're paying the medical insurance for your children. And yet the hospital system undercuts you and says, well, your child now has unilateral access to their chart. You don't get any access unless they give you proxy access, and then that's even limited. So, wow. You know, people say, well, what do I do about it? And I would tell you bluntly, we have not had medical insurance now, I believe, for 5 years. Get out of it. Get mm-hmm. out. Mm-hmm. We've been programmed to believe we've got to have medical insurance. Get out of it. It's a racket, and it's all designed to hasten death.
We got out of it and we found that because I had seen it was even as they were pushing Obamacare, there was an article by the LA Times saying, you look at this and people who have fully covered with health insurance, they wind up paying more than people who don't have any health insurance, even with their 20% that they got to pay or whatever their copay is, that usually is more than what the person who has no insurance pays. And I looked at that, as we found out, if you tell them that you don't have any insurance, that you're a cash patient because you're working with Samaritan Ministries or something like that, those who we worked with, then they say, well, you know, normally we would do this, this, and this, but since you don't have insurance, we won't do that. And it's like, yeah, because those things, all of those things carry risks and may not help you at all. And so you not only save money, but you actually save yourself from a lot of unnecessary and very expensive treatments that you would wind up paying 20% of as well. So yeah, you're absolutely right about that. And you've got, in terms of talking about following the money, you sent some slides here to us. I apologize, we didn't get them in the board here. This one, follow the money. You said the average patients per doctor is about 2,500. And if you've got 30% of them vaccinated by September the 1st, 75% by December the 1st, that's just under $300,000 per doctor bonus from the insurance company. That's one of the things that was so criminal about all this stuff, how the hospitals got incentives for declaring people to be COVID patients. The doctors get incentives for the vaccines. Everybody is being bribed everywhere. And then on our end, we get coerced and blackmailed to follow along with all this stuff. But they were getting bribed left and right by money coming from the insurance companies, coming from the federal government, bribing the hospitals to do all this stuff.
It is so, it's so strange to see that. And what I also want to put in programming again. So, you know, this whole vaccine agenda fueled that slide that you're talking about, and it did it from both sides. Mm-hmm. So the vaccine agenda has been around way longer than what people think. Yes. I was listening to a man speak on it that did a kind of a sermon on it back in 1917. And he talked about, you know, this vaccine agenda is going to grab a hold of society, and eventually they're going to use it to change our DNA. He was predicting that in 1917. Mm. All right. So then why did we buy into this whole vaccine society? Well, they, the cabal, the satanic minions, did a great job laying out lies. So they laid out lies that we're inherently good, for example. Well, the Bible says we're inherently bad. We're in need of a savior. Yeah. They've laid out the lie that there's no God. They laid out evolution. So once you believe in evolution, now God doesn't exist. So then if God doesn't exist, well, how are we going to protect ourselves? So we've got to have these vaccines. Well, so now we go into the doctor's office. We've been programmed to trust the doctor. The doctor is programmed to trust vaccines. And so this, when the doctor gets the memo from Blue Cross Blue Shield, like you were just reading off of, saying, wow, my salary is only $250,000, but I can get a $296,000 bonus for something I already believe in. You know, they don't realize they're killing somebody. Mm-hmm. And this does not give them an excuse. I'm separating that out. But it is, there has been a systematic programming of both the population and the medical staff to hasten death. And these jabs definitely hasten death. I'll tell you an anecdotal story just to give you a perspective of where these physicians are at. As God would have it, my wife Cindy and I, we did this. Grace loved doing certain things. We went to a demolition derby over Labor Day weekend, so 2 months ago.
Well, I love those too.
Yeah. And Grace's original pediatrician sat behind Cindy and I in the bleachers. And so we started chatting with him. He did not know Grace had died. He wasn't the current pediatrician. But I mean, the reason I was shocked he didn't know is because we have a local billboard campaign calling out the hospital. Wow. So you'd think as a physician, he didn't even acknowledge that he saw the billboards multiple times. So wouldn't your natural sense of things want you to look at the website and see what happened and who this was? Anyway, so then he said, well, when did Grace die? And so we tell him October of 21. And he says, wasn't there some antiviral available then, like Remdesivir something? It's like, wow. I said, how awake are you relative to what happened with COVID? And he said, well, I get my information from three nurses at one of the hospitals in Appleton. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is the blind leading the blind.
Yeah.
They're clueless as to what is going on.
That's right. Yeah. These people are so adamant that, you got to wear a mask to come in and see me at the doctor's office or this or that, or, you know, get the vaccines and everything. They genuinely get angry and they genuinely believe it. And it's like, so run away from those people as quickly as you can. As many people have nicknamed Remdesivir, they call it run, death is near. And, you know, run away from these doctors who don't know anything about this stuff. It truly is amazing. But it really has, you know, Scott, as we look at it, there's been a lot of talk about how artificial intelligence is going to replace a lot of white-collar jobs, and even more so than blue-collar jobs, the projection a few years ago that by 2030. And by, you know, they say, well, maybe 50% of transportation jobs, but 60-70% of lawyers and doctors. And I can easily see how that would happen, because when you look at what the typical doctor is doing, he's coming in, he's making an assessment, he's asked you some questions about your symptoms, and then basically he does a kind of a lookup table. Well, they have this symptom and that symptom, and so that would say that this is the drug that I give them. You know, and they're just a lookup table. Certainly you could have artificial intelligence do that, or any kind of a computer program. You don't even need AI to do that, but to, you know, to look at symptoms and here's the pharmaceutical drug I'm going to give you, and that's it. You know, they don't work with health, they just dispense drugs.
And it truly in Grace's, when I realized Grace was murdered, I thought this through, because at that time I was familiar with the software that they use called Epic. So Epic is the software manufacturer that is in most of the hospitals. And so you can see how AI would determine, because the standards of care are plopped into the software. And so the standards of care plop out the treatment plan, right? Well, then I realized this, there's another overlay, which is, you know, I always thought, you know, they're going to look at what type of insurance you have, right? Because it's financially motivated. But then when it's death motivated, I realized, well, there's an overlay for Medicare and Medicaid. Well, then as I put together this series, God gave me the glimpse as to where this is going with AI, because, you know, eventually what will be programmed into the worldwide software is our social credit scores and our birth certificate values. So all of a sudden, we get a customized standard of care, David, but it's so that AI determines our date of death instead of God. Of course, God's ultimately in charge, so he still is determining our date of death, but that's where this is going. And I put together a flow chart that's in the series that documents that, because, you know, God, he's done this a few times since Grace's death. He always seems to get me up about 1:30 in the morning when it's important.
Absolutely. You know, as early in the program, I talked about how Gavin Newsom just came back from China, and he's got a program to track you from cradle to career, he said. It's actually cradle to grave. And so what they profile you, they, and again, as you point out, give you a standard, a customized kind of medical care. You're not somebody that the state really likes, so maybe we might shove you out a little bit earlier, or do everything that we can to shove you out a little bit earlier. That's really what we're looking at. It is going to be personalized, weaponized, politicized, all of these different things, and that kind of medical tyranny. I think it is interesting that, you know, they ran these subsidies for the hospitals. They ran it through CMS, Medicare, Medicaid. Because again, they're, you know, this is to kill people early, and to, you know, even though they would give them a 20% bonus for declaring somebody as having COVID, and then they would give them, you know, a $13,000 bonus, but then 20% of everything that they did. And if they put them on a ventilator, they get $39,000. We look at this as a lot of money, but they're looking at how much money they're going to save from getting rid of the person instead of having them stay on Medicare, instead of having them collect Social Security. Let's get rid of them sooner. And so in the long run, I think there was a, you know, there certainly was a financial incentive for it. But as you point out, it ultimately is a satanic incentive just to kill the human race. And that's what really is fundamentally at the base of this and all of these different things, euthanasia to so-called abortion, all of it is about that. So thank you so much for putting this together. And I'm sure that series is an excellent series. And people can find that again at was it ouramazinggrace.net? Ouramazinggrace.net. Okay. And so take a look at that. You'll find Scott's podcast, his series that he just gave you a little bit of a teaser on. And thank you for doing that. And I'm so sorry again as to what happened. But as you point out, God is using what they meant for evil for good. And I think it's going to result in the good for a lot of people. I really do. Thank you.
Thanks, David. I appreciate your encouragement.
Thank you. Folks, we're going to be right back. Stay with us. We'll be back right after this break.
Decoding the mainstream propaganda. It's the David Knight Show.